Chapter 1. I've barely mustered up the strength to make it into work today. It's been 5 days since I've seen Jesse Ward. 5 days of agony, emptiness, and sobbing. Every time my eyes close, he's there, the images flickering from the sure, confident, beautiful man who totally took me, to the hollow, hurtful, drunken creature who destroyed me. Without him, I feel empty and incomplete. He made me need him, and now he's gone. In the darkness, I see his face, and in the silence, I hear his voice. There is no escaping it. I'm unaware of the activity around me, every noise a distant hum, every image a slow blur. I'm in hell. Empty, incomplete. I'm in absolute agony. I left Jesse drunk and raging at his penthouse last Sunday. I've not heard from him since that day I walked out, leaving him yelling and stumbling around. There have been no phone calls, no messages, no flowers. Nothing. Sam is still a regular semi-naked presence at Kate's, but he knows better than to talk to me about Jesse. He keeps quiet and well away. I must be painful to be around at the moment. How can a man who I've known a few short weeks make me feel like this? But in those short few weeks I have known him, I've learned that he's intense, hot-blooded, and controlling. But he's also gentle, affectionate, and protective. I miss that Jesse so much. But the drunken, hollow man I found at the penthouse was not the Jesse I had fallen in love with. I would gladly take all of his frustrating, challenging ways over the ugliness that was Jesse drunk. Apparently, Jesse falling off the wagon was my entire fault. He advised me on a slur that he'd warned me that there would be damage if I left. He had. He just didn't explain what sort of damage or why. I should have pressed for more, but I was too busy being swallowed up by him. I was distracted from everything, blinded by lust and drowning in his intensity. I never anticipated he would turn out to be Lord of the Sex Manor, and I certainly never anticipated he was an alcoholic. I was literally walking around with my eyes wide shut. I'm lucky that I've managed to avoid any pressing questions from Patrick regarding Mr. Ward's project. When £100,000 landed in Rococo Union's bank account, courtesy of Mr. Ward, I was immensely grateful. With so much money paid up front, I could fob Patrick off with an imaginary business trip that's keeping Mr. Ward out of the country and the project on hold. I know I'll have to deal with this eventually. I just don't feel strong enough at the moment, and I'm not sure when I will. Perhaps never. Poor Kate has tried so hard to pull me out of the black hole that I've put myself in. She's tried to occupy me with yoga classes, drinks at the pub, and cake decorating. But I'm happier festering in my bed. And she meets me without fail every lunchtime. Not that I can eat anything. It's hard enough just to swallow without trying to get food past the permanent lump that's wedged in my throat. The only thing I look forward to at the moment is my morning walk. I'm not sleeping, so dragging myself out of bed at 5 o'clock every morning is relatively easy. In the quiet, fresh morning air, I make my way to the spot in the Green Park, where I collapsed with exhaustion the morning Jesse dragged me around the streets of London on one of his torturous marathons. I sit quietly, picking at the dew-coated blades of grass, until my backside is numb and sodden, and I'm ready to wander slowly back to prepare myself for another day without Jesse. How long can I go on like this? My brother, Dan, is back in London tomorrow after visiting my parents in Cornwall. I should be looking forward to seeing him. It's been 6 months since I last did. But where am I going to find the energy to put on a front? My mobile blurts from my desk, dragging me from my daydreams and tapping pen. It's Ruth Quinn. I inwardly groan. Ruth is a new client and proving to be a challenge already. She rang on Tuesday and demanded an appointment for the same day. I explained that I was busy and suggested someone else may be able to make it, but she insisted she wanted me and eventually settled for my first appointment, which happened to be today. She has since called every day to remind me. "Miss Quinn," I greet tiredly. "Ava, how are you?" she always asks, which is nice, I suppose. I won't tell her the truth. "I'm good, and you?" "Yes, yes, fine," she chirps. "I just wanted to check our appointment." 4:30, Miss Quinn," I reiterate for the third consecutive day. I think I might be pricing myself out of this job. "Lovely, I look forward to it." I hang up and blow out a long, calming breath of air. What was I thinking, ending my Friday on a new client, and a difficult one at that? Victoria comes breezing into the office, her long blonde locks fanning over her shoulders. She looks different. She looks orange. "What have you done?" I ask, completely alarmed. I know I'm not seeing particularly clearly at the moment, but there is no denying the tone of her skin. She rolls her eyes and retrieves her compact mirror from her mulberry to inspect her face. "Don't," she warns. "I asked for bronzed." She scrubs at her face with a tissue. "The stupid woman used the wrong bottle. I look like a cheese puff." She continues to scrub her face while huffing and puffing. "You need to get yourself some body scrub and head for the shower," I advise, turning back to my computer. "I can't believe this is happening to me," she cries. "Drew is taking me out tonight. He'll run a mile when he sees me like this." "Where are you going?" I ask. "Langan's. I'll be mistaken for a Z-lister. I can't go like this." This is a complete catastrophe for Victoria. She and Drew have only been seeing each other for a week, another relationship off the back of my clusterfuck of a life. All I need now is for Tom to walk in and declare he's getting married. Selfishly, I'm not happy for anyone. Sally, our general office dog's body, comes scuttling out of the kitchen and stops in her tracks when she spies Victoria.
"Wow! Victoria, are you okay?"
she asks, and I smile to myself as Sally gives me an alarmed look. All of this beautification stuff goes straight over our plain Sal's head. "Fine," Victoria snaps. Sally retreats to the safety of the stationery cupboard, escaping a very riled Victoria and an even more miserable me. "Where's Tom?" I ask in an attempt to distract Victoria from her fake tan crisis. She slams her compact mirror down on her desk and swings around to face me. If I had the energy, I would laugh. She looks terrible. "He's at Mrs. Baines's. It would appear the nightmare continues," she huffs, ruffling her blonde locks around her face. I leave Victoria and her glowing face, returning to staring numbly at my computer screen. I can't wait for the day to end, so I can crawl into my bed, where I don't have to see, speak, or interact with anyone. I arrive at a stunning townhouse on Lansdowne Crescent right on time, and Miss Quinn answers the door. I'm completely surprised. Her voice doesn't match her appearance in the slightest. I had her down as a middle-aged spinster, piano teacher type, but I couldn't have been further from the mark. She's very attractive, with long blonde hair, big blue eyes, and smooth, pale skin, and she is wearing a lovely black dress with killer wedges. She smiles. "You must be Ava. Please come in." She directs me through to a horrendous 70s throwback kitchen. "Miss Quinn, my portfolio." I hand her my file, and she takes it keenly. She has a really warm smile. Maybe I got her all wrong. "Please, call me Ruth. I've heard a lot about your work, Ava," she says as she flicks through the file. "Luso especially." "Oh, you have?" I sound surprised, but I'm not. Patrick has been delighted by the response Rococo Union has gotten from the publicity of Luso. I would prefer to forget about all things Luso, but that doesn't seem likely.
Yes, of course. Everyone's talking about it. You did an amazing job. Would you like a drink?
A coffee would be good, thank you. She smiles and sets about making drinks.
Please sit down, Ava.
I take a seat and pull out my client briefing folder.
So what can I help you with, Ruth?
She laughs and waves the teaspoon around in the general direction of the room.
Need you ask? It's hideous, isn't it? She exclaims, returning to coffee-making duties.
Yes, actually it is. But I'm not about to gasp in horror at the brown and yellow arrangement with faux brick walls.
She continues. Obviously I'm looking for some ideas to transform this monstrosity. I was thinking of knocking through and making it a large family room. Here, I'll show you.
She hands me a coffee and signals for me to follow her through to the next room. The decor is equally as grim as the kitchen.
She seems quite young, mid-30s perhaps, so I'm guessing she's not long moved in. This place doesn't look like it's been touched with a paintbrush in 40 years.
After an hour of discussions, I'm confident that I know what Ruth is trying to achieve. She has good vision. I'll draft a few designs in line with your budget and ideas, and get them to you with a schedule of my fees, I tell her as I'm leaving. Is there anything in particular I should allow for?
No, not at all. Obviously, I want all the basic luxuries you would expect to find in a kitchen.
She puts her hand out, and I take it politely.
A wine fridge? She laughs.
Absolutely. I smile tightly, the mention of alcohol making my blood run cold.
I'll be in touch, Miss Quinn.
Ruth, please. She shakes her head.
I look forward to it, Ava.
I drag myself down the street towards Kate's house, hoping she's not home so I can retreat to my room before she resumes mission perk Ava up.
Ava!
I stop and see Sam hanging out of his car window as he cruises slowly beside me.
Hey, Samuel,
I say on a strained smile as I carry on walking.
Ava, please don't join your evil friend in the Piss Sam Off Club. I might be forced to move out.
He parks and gets out of his Porsche, meeting me on the pavement outside Kate's house. He looks his usual laid-back self, with ridiculously baggy shorts, a Rolling Stones t-shirt, and his mousy brown hair a disheveled mess.
I'm sorry. Have you moved in permanently now? I ask on an arched brow.
Sam has his own swanky apartment on Hyde Park with much more room, but with Kate's workshop on the ground floor of her house, she insists on him staying at hers.
No, I haven't. Kate said you would be home by 6. I was hoping to catch you.
He suddenly looks all nervous, which is making me feel extremely uncomfortable.
Is everything okay? I ask.
He offers a little smile, but it doesn't reach his dimple.
Not really.
Ava, I need you to come with me, he says quietly.
Where?
Why is he acting so shifty? This is not like Sam. He's usually so carefree and unapologetic.
To Jesse's place.
Sam must see the look of horror on my face because he steps toward me with a pleading expression. Just the mention of his name sends me into a panic. Why does he want me to go to Jesse's? After our last meeting, you would have to drag me there kicking and screaming. There is no chance in hell I'm returning to that place, not ever.
Sam, I don't think so.
I take a step back, shaking my head. My body has started shaking too. He sighs and scuffs his trainers on the pavement.
Ava, I'm getting worried. He's not answering his phone, and no one has heard from him. I don't know what else to do. I know you don't want to talk to him, but it's been nearly 5 days. I've been to Luso, but the concierge refuses to let us up. He'll let you. Kate said you know him. Can't you just get us up there? I just need to know he's okay.
No, Sam, I'm sorry, I can't, I croak.
Ava, I'm worried he's done something stupid, please.
My throat starts to close up, and Sam starts walking toward me with his hands outstretched. I didn't realize I was moving backward.
Sam, please don't. I can't do that. He won't want to see me, and I don't want to see him.
He grabs my hands to halt my retreat, pulling me into his chest and holding me tight against him.
Ava, I wouldn't ask, I really wouldn't, but I need to get up there and check on him.
My shoulders droop, defeated in his embrace, and a quiet sob escapes, just when I thought there were no tears left.
I can't see him, Sam.
Hey, he pulls back and looks at me. Just get us past the concierge. That's all I'm asking. He wipes away a stray tear and smiles pleadingly.
I'm not going in, I affirm, my stomach a knot of panic at the thought of seeing him again.
But what if he has done something stupid?
Ava, just get us up to his penthouse.
I nod and wipe away the rolling tears.
Thank you.
He tugs me toward his Porsche. Get in. Drew and John are meeting us there. He opens the passenger door and directs me into the car. I climb in and let Sam drive me to Luso at St. Catherine Docks, a place I swore that I would never return to again. Chapter 2. As Luso comes into view, I start hyperventilating. The overwhelming desire to open the door and jump out of Sam's moving car is hard to resist. He glances at me, an obviously anxious look on his cute face, as if he senses my intention to bolt. Once we're parked outside the gates, Sam comes around to collect me, keeping a firm grip on me as he guides us toward the pedestrian gates where Drew's waiting. He's dressed in his usual finery, all suited and booted, with perfectly styled black hair, but he doesn't make me feel uncomfortable anymore. I'm more than shocked when he takes over Sam's hold of me, though, pulling me into him and squeezing me hard. This is the first actual contact I've ever had with a man.
Ava, thank you for coming.
I say nothing, because I really don't know what to say. They're truly worried about Jesse, and I feel guilty and even more anxious now. Drew releases me and offers a small reassuring smile. It does nothing to reassure me. Sam points up the road.
Here's the big guy.
We turn to see John pull up in his black Range Rover, skidding to an abrupt halt behind Sam's car. He slides his big body out, removes his wraparound sunglasses, and nods in greeting. This is John's usual wordless acknowledgement. Good Lord, he looks pissed. I've only ever got a brief glimpse of his eyes. They are always concealed behind those glasses, even at night or inside. But the sun is shining now, so why he has taken them off is beyond me. Maybe he wants everyone to know how pissed he is. It's working. He looks formidable. I take a deep breath and punch in the code, pushing the gate open for the guys.
I wish this was as far as I had to go.
Drew gestures for me to lead the way, ever the gentleman, so I pick my feet up and start my walk across the car park in silence. I see Jesse's car and notice his window is still smashed. My stomach flips as we enter the marble foyer of Luso quietly, except for the thumping of our footsteps. My insides start churning, my breathing speeding up. So much has happened in this place. Luso was my first major accomplishment in design. My first sexual encounter with Jesse happened here, as did my final encounter with him. It all started and ended here. Clive looks up from his big curved marble desk as we approach, his expression screaming tiresome.
Clive,
I say on a forced smile. He eyes me and then the three ominous beings accompanying me before his eyes settle on me again.
Hello, Ava. How are you?
I'm good, Clive, I lie. You?
I'm fine.
He's weary, no doubt after having a few heated encounters with the three men escorting me, and judging by his cold reception toward me, they were not pleasant.
"Clive, I'd be grateful if you would let us up to the penthouse to check on Jessie."
I lowered my voice with lashings of confidence, but I feel anything but. My heart is speeding up by the second.
"Ava, I've told your friends here. I could lose my job if I allow that."
He flicks a cautious gaze to the boys again.
"I know, Clive, but they're worried," I say, sounding completely detached. "They just want to check he's okay and then they'll be leaving,"
I try with graciousness, as I know Drew, Sam, and John would have been a lot less than that.
"Ava, I've been up and knocked on Mr. Ward's door and got no response. We've checked some of the CCTV, and I have not seen him leave or return on my watch. Security cannot check 5 days of continuous footage. I have told your friends this. If I let you up, I could lose my job."
I'm stunned at Clive's sudden turnabout in concierge etiquette. If only he had been this professional and stubborn when I came to see Jessie on Sunday, then we might never have had the altercation we did. But then I would still be blissfully unaware of Jessie's little problem. I feel Sam press up against my back.
"Let us up, for fuck's sake!" he yells over my shoulder.
I flinch slightly, but I can't blame him for being frustrated. I'm feeling pretty frustrated myself. I just want to get them past Clive and go. I can feel the walls closing in on all sides of me, and I can see Jessie carrying me across the marble floor in his arms. All of the images swamping my brain are now all the more clear for being here. I turn and see John with a face like thunder and his hand on Sam's shoulder, his way of telling Sam to calm down. I didn't want to do this, but tempers are fraying.
"Clive, I would hate to resort to blackmail," I say tightly, turning back to face him.
He looks at me in confusion, and I can see his brain ticking over, trying to think of what I could possibly blackmail him with.
"I would hate for anyone to find out about Mr. Gomez's regular visitors, or Mr. Holland's fondness of a Thai girl or two."
I watch as Clive's face screws up into a contortion of defeatism.
"Ava, you play nasty, my girl."
"You leave me no other choice, Clive."
He shakes his head and motions us onto the elevator while muttering insults under his breath.
"Brilliant," Sam chants as they make their way over to the penthouse lift.
I don't have any idea how it happens, but I find my feet lifting and taking small steps behind them, following them to the elevator.
"Jessie might have changed the code," I say to their backs.
Sam swings around, looking alarmed.
I shrug.
"If he has, then there is no way of getting up there." All of a sudden, I'm standing in front of the elevator, taking a deep breath and punching in the developer code. There's a chorus of exhales as the doors open and they all get in, and I stand on the outside looking up at Sam. He smiles, jerking his head mildly, encouraging me to board with them. I do. I get in the elevator, Sam and Drew flanking me on one side, John on the other, and I enter the code again. We travel up in an uncomfortable silence, and as the lift doors open, we're faced with the double doors that lead into Jessie's penthouse. Sam is the first to exit the lift, striding toward the doors and jiggling the handle calmly before he starts hammering on the door like a madman.
"Jessie, open the fucking door!"
Drew and John approach and pull him away, and then John tries the door himself, but it doesn't budge. I can't help but think I might have been the last person to exit the penthouse. I remember making a point of slamming the door as hard as I could.
"Sam, mate, he might not even be here," Drew soothes.
"Where the hell is he then?" Sam yells.
"Oh, he's in there," John rumbles. "And the motherfucker has been drowning in his sorrows for too long now. He's got a business to run."
I'm still standing in the elevator when the doors start to shut, snapping me out of my dazed state. My natural reflex has my arm flinging up to stop them closing before I step out into the penthouse foyer. I know I said that I would get them up here and leave. I know I should just go. But seeing Sam in such a state has me even more worried, and John's words are prickling me. Drowning in his sorrows, or drowning in vodka? If I stay, am I going to be faced with drunken, raging Jesse again? Drew knocks on the door calmly. It's laughable. If Sam's relentless hammering doesn't get a response, then I doubt Drew's gentlemanly tapping will. He steps away from the door and drags Sam over to me. "Ava, have you tried calling him?" Drew asks. "No," I blurt. "Why would I do that? I'm pretty sure he wouldn't want to talk to me." "Can you try?" Sam asks pleadingly. I shake my head. "He wouldn't answer, Sam." "Ava, will you just try?" Drew pushes. I reluctantly get my phone from my bag and dial Jesse while Sam and Drew watch nervously. I'm not sure what on earth I'm going to say if he answers. Drew's head snaps toward the door. I can hear it ringing. He returns to me, obviously waiting for me to speak, but my call goes to voicemail and my heart constricts. He doesn't want to talk to me. I go to reboard the elevator, the hurt inflamed by his rejection of my call, but then an almighty crash sounds out around the foyer. Sam, Drew, and I all whip our heads around to the double doors leading into Jesse's penthouse and find John on the other side, surrounded by a splintered doorframe. He nods at us, and Sam and Drew fly forward into the penthouse. I find myself following tentatively behind them, remembering the last time I was here. "Turn around! Get in the elevator! Go now!" But I don't. I stand in the doorway, and from what I can see, nothing has moved. I step a little bit farther into the open area and hear the guys running around upstairs and down, searching for Jesse. And as the bottom of the stairs comes into view, I notice the empty bottle of vodka is still on the console table. Then I see the terrace doors wide open. I take cautious steps toward them, still hearing the guys running around the penthouse, doors opening and closing, his name being called. I, however, am pulled toward the terrace. I know why. It's the same magnetism that pulls me toward Jesse every time he is near. Only this time I know it won't be my Jesse. Do I want to face him again, when he's in such a terrible state, when he's so vicious and hateful? No, of course I don't, but I can't seem to turn away. As I approach the doors, I try to prepare my eyes for a drunken mess sprawled across one of the sun loungers, clenching a vodka bottle. But instead, I'm greeted by Jesse's naked, unconscious body, face down on the decking. I choke on my heart, and my pulse starts pounding in my ears. "He's here!" I scream, running toward his lifeless body and throwing my bag down as I collapse by his side. I grip his big shoulders to try and turn him over. I don't know where I get my strength from, but I manage it, yanking him over so his head is cradled in my lap. I start desperately smoothing my hands over his bearded face, noticing his hand still swollen and bruised, with dried blood all over his knuckles. "Jesse, wake up! Please wake up!" I plead, giving into hysteria as I look at the man I love, unconscious and unresponsive, lying in my lap. Tears pour down my face and spill onto his cheeks. "Jesse, please!" I desperately run my hands over his face, his chest, his hair. He looks hollow, he's lost weight, and his jaw is covered in a week's worth of stubble.
"Motherfucker," John rumbles when he finds me on the terrace with Jesse supported in my lap.
I don't know if he's breathing," I sob, looking up through glazed eyes to the mountain of a man stalking toward me.
"Here,"
John gestures, kneeling down and taking Jesse's arm from me. I look up and see Sam skid to a halt at the door.
What the...
Tears are invading my eyes uncontrollably, and everything has gone into slow motion. Sam makes his way over and lowers himself down next to me. He starts rubbing my arm.
I'll call an ambulance,
Drew says urgently, as he finds us all crowded around Jesse's motionless form.
Hold up,
John barks harshly, leaning over Jesse and pulling his dried lips apart, inspecting every part of his limp body.
The stupid motherfucker! He's drunk himself into a fucking coma!
I look at Sam and Drew, but I can't fathom their reaction to John's conclusion. How does he know this? He could be half dead for all John knows. He certainly looks it.
I think we should call an ambulance,
I push between sniffles. John looks at me sympathetically. I've never seen anything but a completely impassive expression on his hard face, so the way he is looking at me now, all sorrowful and like I'm a little naive, is strangely comforting.
Ava, girl, I've seen him like this more than once. He needs his bed and some care to get him through this. He doesn't need a doctor, not that sort anyway.
John shakes his head. Oh. How many times is more than once? John sounds like he knows the drill. He's not at all concerned by the condition of Jesse lying in my lap, whereas I am a hysterical wreck. Sam and Drew are not all that good either. Have they seen him like this before? John clucks my cheek and hoists himself up off the floor. I've never heard him say so much. The big, silent giant turns out to be the big friendly giant, but I still wouldn't want to cross him.
What happened to his hand?
Sam asks when he clocks the bloodied, bruised mess. It really looks terrible and probably needs looking at. He smashed the window on his car, I sniffle, and they all look at me. When we rowed at Kate's, I add, almost ashamed.
Should we get him to his bed?
Drew asks timidly.
Sofa,
John instructs. We're back to a few words. I watch as Sam gets up and collects an empty vodka bottle from under the sun lounger. He looks at it in complete disgust and dramatically smashes it on the side of a raised planter, making me flinch at the loud noise that echoes around us. But more significantly, it makes Jesse flinch too.
Jesse?
I shake him slightly.
Jesse, please, open your eyes.
Sam, Drew, and John all crowd around us, and Jesse's arm starts to rise above his head, flapping around in thin air. I clasp it and place it back by his side, but as soon as I release it, he brings it back up in front of my face, mumbling inaudibly and thrashing his legs about.
He's looking for you, girl,
John says quietly. I throw a shocked glance at John, and he nods at me. He's looking for me. I reach for his hand again and guide it to my face, spreading his palm against my cheek. He instantly calms. His cold palm on my face offers me little comfort, but it seems to soothe him, so I hold it there and let him feel me, horrified that he has, quite possibly, been out here on the terrace for days, unclothed and unconscious. It might be mild in the daytime, but nightfall brings cooler temperatures. Why did I walk out on him? I should have stayed and calmed him down, not walked away. I'll go and get some bedding from upstairs, Drew says, heading back into the penthouse.
Shall we?
John prompts, nodding at Jesse on the floor. I reluctantly release Jesse's hand and let Sam and John flank him on either side to coordinate a lift. As he's lifted from my lap, I pull myself up and run ahead to make sure their path is clear and the entire leather corner couch free of a million cushions, all courtesy of me, so it looks more like a bed when I'm done. As Drew comes down the stairs, with his hands full of blankets, Sam and John wait patiently with Jesse's naked weight spread evenly between them. I take a velvet throw from Drew
and laid over the cold leather, and then move back, so John and Sam can lower him onto the couch before propping his head up on some pillows and laying another throw over his naked body. I drop to my knees at his side, smoothing my hand down the side of his stubbled face, regret washing over me, tears starting to fall again. I could have stopped this. If I hadn't stormed out, he wouldn't be in this state now. I should have stayed, calmed him down, and sobered him up. I hate myself. "Ava, are you okay?" I hear Drew's quiet voice over my suppressed sobs, and a hand starts rubbing my back. I sniffle and wipe my nose with the back of my hand. "I'm fine. Sorry."
"Don't apologize," Sam sighs.
I lean over Jesse and rest my lips on his forehead, leaving them to linger for a few seconds, and as I lift myself from the floor, his arm shoots out from under the blanket and grabs me.
"Ava."
His voice is cracked and hoarse, and his eyes open slightly, searching around the room. And when they find mine, all I can see are empty pits of nothing. His usual green, addictive eyes are bordering on black.
"Hey."
I place my hand over his on my arm. He starts to lift his head from the pillow, but before I have a chance to push him back down, he gives up trying.
"I'm so sorry,"
he murmurs, his hand starting to pat its way up my arm to find my face again.
"I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry."
"Stop," I whisper on a quivering voice, helping his hand to reach my face. "Please, just stop." I turn my lips into his hand and kiss his palm, and when I turn to face him again, his eyes are closed. He's gone again. Taking his hand and placing it under the blanket, I make sure he is tucked in well before pulling myself up and turning to see Sam, Drew, and John, all standing silently watching me tend to him. I had completely forgotten I wasn't alone with Jesse, but I'm not in the least bit embarrassed. "I'll make some coffee." Sam breaks the silence and heads for the kitchen, John and Drew following. I take another glance at Jesse, my instinct telling me to crawl onto the sofa and snuggle up to him, stroke him and soothe him. I might just do that, but first I need to talk to the guys. I follow them into the kitchen and find Sam and Drew picking up bar stools and John heaving the freezer up from the floor. It wasn't like this when I left on Sunday. Jesse clearly flew into a rage.
"I've got to shoot," Drew says, regretfully, placing the last stool upright. "I'm taking Victoria out." He looks a little embarrassed.
"You go, bud," Sam pushes as he hunts for the mugs. "I'll call you later."
"Last cupboard on the right, top shelf." I give Sam the directions to the mugs, and he turns looking at me quizzically as Drew leaves. I shrug. He transports 3 mugs of black coffee to the island where John and I have taken our seats.
"We won't risk the milk. That's if he's even got any. Black okay?"
Sam asks. I nod and help myself, John following suit, putting an incredible 4 sugars into his coffee. I know there is no milk, but it would be pointless sharing this.
"So," Sam begins, "now we found him, what are we going to do with him?" he jokes.
Carefree Sam is back, and it's quite a relief. Seeing him so fraught had only fueled my own worry, and as it turns out, he had every reason to be anxious. I inwardly shudder at the thought of Jesse alone and suffering for the last 5 days. How much longer would he have been lying there if I had refused to come? They would have surely phoned the police. John pipes up.
"Everything is running smoothly at the manor for now. We don't have to worry about that. He'll be back to normal after nursing a week-long hangover."
"Doesn't he need to go to rehab?" I ask. "Or therapy, or I don't know. I have no idea how these things work." John shakes his head and puts his glasses back on. and I start to wonder about his relationship with Jesse. I thought he was just an employee, but he seems to be the one in the know about all of this.
No rehab, John states firmly. He's not obsessed with alcohol, Ava. He drank to lighten his foul mood, to fill a gap. Once he starts, he can't stop.
He offers me a small smile.
You helped, girl.
What did I do? I don't know why I sound so hurt by John's statement. He has just told me I helped the situation, but I can't help feeling like he's insinuating that I might have helped with a relapse as well. Sam places his hand over mine on the worktop. His attention was focused elsewhere. But then I left him, I say quietly. I'm just confirming what they are both thinking.
It's not your fault, Ava, Sam reassures me firmly. You weren't to know.
He never told me, I whisper. If I had known, things would have been different. Really, I'm not sure how things would have been different if Jesse had told me. But I know I never want to see him like he was last Sunday again. If I leave now, will that happen? My head is a jumbled mess. I prop my elbows on the counter and plant my head in my hands. What the hell am I supposed to do?
Ava?
John's deep rumble pulls my head back up.
He's a good man.
What made him drink? How bad is it? I ask. I know he's a good man deep down, but if I know more, I might understand better.
Who knows?
John muses, and then looks at me.
Don't be thinking he was smashed all day every day. He wasn't. How he is right now, that's just because of misery, not because he's an alcoholic.
And he didn't drink when I turned up. I can't believe that. John laughs.
He didn't, although you have brought out some other nasty qualities in him, girl.
I frown, but I know exactly what John's talking about, and so does Sam by the look on his cheeky face. I've been told Jesse is usually quite a laid-back type, but I've only ever seen snippets of a laid-back Jesse Ward, and that was mostly when he was getting his own way. Most of the time, all I've seen is an unreasonable control freak. He even admitted himself that he's only like that with me. Lucky me. I'll stay, but if he comes round and he doesn't want me here, I will be calling one of you two, I warn. Sam visibly sags.
That won't happen, Ava.
John nods.
I need to get myself back to the manor and run that motherfucker's business.
He gets himself up from the barstool.
Ava, you need my number. Where's your phone?
I look around for my bag and realize that I've left it on the terrace, so I jump up and leave Sam and John in the kitchen while I go to fetch it. On my way back to the kitchen, I see Jesse is still out for the count. How long will he be like this? And at what point should I really worry? I have no idea what I'm supposed to do. I stand silently watching him, his lashes flickering mildly, his chest rising and falling steadily. Even unconscious, he looks troubled. Approaching quietly, I pull the blanket up to his chin. I can't help it. I've never looked after him before, but it's instinctive. I kneel and rest my lips on his cold cheek, soaking up the little bit of comfort I get from the contact, before standing and making my way back to the kitchen. John has gone.
Here,
Sam passes me a piece of paper. John's number. Was he in a rush? I ask. He could have waited for me.
He never hangs around for longer than necessary. Listen, I've spoken to Kate. She's bringing some clothes over for you.
Oh, okay. My poor clothes are going to wonder where they live. They have been transported back and forth to this place on numerous occasions.
Thank you, Ava, Sam says sincerely.
Don't thank me, I protest, feeling uncomfortable, especially since this is partly my fault. Sam shuffles nervously.
I know. It's just, well, after last Sunday, the manor shock. Don't, Sam.
When he drinks, he really drinks, Sam laughs lightly. He's a proud man, Ava. He'll be mortified that we've seen him like this.
I imagine he will be. The Jesse I know is strong, confident, domineering, and a whole heap of other things. Weak and helpless are not included in the long list of Jesse's attributes. I want to tell Sam that the manor and its activities have been diluted by this drink issue, but it hasn't. Not really. Now I'm here, and I've laid my eyes on Jesse again. It's all screaming very loudly in my head. Jesse owns a sex club. He also uses the facilities of his own club. Sam confirmed it, even though it was glaringly obvious when I was faced with the husband of one of Jesse's conquests. I knew deep down that he must have slept around, that he was a pleasure-seeking playboy, but I certainly didn't ever imagine how. We spend the next hour collecting empties and cleaning up the penthouse. I empty the fridge of more vodka, tipping it all down the sink, thinking I won't be drinking it ever again. Clive rings up to tell me that a young lady's in the foyer by the name of Kate, and after I've advised him of what we found, we go down to meet her, each dragging a black bin bag full of rubbish and empty bottles. I make a mental note to sort the mangled door out. When we arrive in the foyer, Kate is waiting under the close observation of Clive. "Hey," she says cautiously as we approach, dragging the clanging bin bags with us. "How is he?" I release the bag, causing more clanging, and give Clive the eyeball just to let him know that I'm really pissed off with him. If he had let Sam, Drew, or John up to Jesse's penthouse before now, we may have only found him drunk instead of completely comatose. He has the decency to look apologetic. "He's asleep," Sam answers her, when it becomes obvious that I'm too busy making Clive feel guilty. When I turn my attention back to Kate, I see Sam slip his free arm around her and give her a hug. She bats him away playfully. "Here," Kate passes me my overnight bag. "I just chucked anything and everything in it." "Thanks." I take the bag. "So you're staying here then?" she asks. "Yeah," I answer on a shrug. Sam gives me that appreciative stare, and I immediately feel uncomfortable again. "How long are you staying?" Kate asks. "Good question. How long do these things take? He could wake tonight, or it could be tomorrow or the next day. I have a job to do and an apartment to find." I look at Sam for some clue, but he only shrugs, so I look back at Kate and shrug too. I'm suddenly aware that I've left Jesse upstairs alone, and I start to panic. He might wake up and no one will be there. "I should get back up there," I say, looking back toward the elevators. "Sure, you go." Kate shoos me with her hand and takes the bin bag from the floor. "We'll get rid of these." We say our goodbyes, and I promise to call her in the morning before I head back to the elevator, instructing Clive to sort out Jesse's car window and the door to his penthouse on my way. He, of course, gets straight onto it. When I arrive back at the top floor, I wander into the living room and see Jesse still asleep. So, what do I do now? I'm still in my taupe dress and heels, so I head upstairs and allocate myself the room at the far end of the landing. Then I change into my ripped jeans and a black T-shirt. I could do with a shower, but I don't want to leave Jesse alone for too long. It'll have to wait. After making my way back downstairs, I make a black coffee, and as I stand sipping it in the kitchen, I figure it would be a good idea to read up on alcoholism. Jesse must have a computer somewhere, so I go in search, finding a laptop in his study. I fire it up, and I'm immensely relieved when it doesn't prompt me for a password.
I take it downstairs and settle myself in the big chair opposite Jesse so I can keep an eye on him. Pulling up Google, I type in alcoholics, and I'm presented with 17 million results. At the top of the page, though, is Alcoholics Anonymous. That would be a good place to start, I suppose. John might have said that Jesse isn't an alcoholic, but I'm doubtful. After a few hours of browsing the internet, I feel like my brain cells have been zapped. There is so much to take in. Long-term effects, psychiatric problems, withdrawal symptoms. I read a piece about severe childhood trauma leading to alcoholism, which leaves me wondering if Jesse had something happen to him when he was a boy, the vicious scar on his abdomen springing to mind immediately. There are also genetic connections, so then I wonder if one of his parents was an alcoholic. I'm bombarded with information, and I don't know what to do with any of it. My mind flicks back to last Sunday and the things he said to me. "You're a fucking prick tease, Ava. I needed you and you left me." Then I had left him. Again. I shut the laptop in exasperation and put it on the coffee table. It's only 10 o'clock, but I'm totally spent. I don't want to go upstairs to bed in case he wakes up, so I gather a few cushions, lay them on the floor next to him, and settle myself, resting my head on the sofa and stroking the hairs on his toned arms. It relaxes me to have the contact, and it's not long before my eyes are heavy and I'm drifting off. Chapter 3.
I love you.
I'm vaguely aware of his palm holding the back of my head, his fingers running through my hair, and it feels so comforting, so right. I open my eyes and I'm met by a duller version of the green I know so well. I jump to my feet and smack my ankle on the coffee table. "Shit!" I curse.
"Watch your mouth,"
he scolds me, his voice gritty and broken. I grasp my ankle, but then I wake up fully and remember where I am. I drop my foot and swing my gaze to the sofa, finding Jesse sat up slightly, looking terrible, but at least he's awake.
"You're awake!" I cry.
He winces, clasping his head with his good hand.
Oh, shit.
He must have the hangover from hell, and here I am screeching like a banshee. I walk back the few steps needed to find the chair behind me and then lower myself onto the seat. I have no idea what to say to him. I'm not about to ask how he's feeling. That is pretty obvious, and I'm not going to hit him with a lecture about personal safety or disregarding his health. I want to ask him if he remembers our fight. I want to ask him why he didn't tell me he owns a sex club or that he has an issue with drink. I want to ask him if he's wondering what I'm doing here and if he wants me to leave. I want to tell him that I love him. But I don't. Instead, I blurt, "How are you feeling?" and instantly wish I had kept my mouth shut. He sighs and inspects his damaged hand.
"Shit,"
he states sharply. He must need some fluids, so I get up and head toward the kitchen.
"Where are you going?"
he asks, slightly panicked and bolting upright on the couch. "I thought you might need some water," I assure him, my heart lifting a little. I've seen that face plenty of times. The domineering control freak usually follows, after he's pinned me down somewhere, but I won't get my hopes up too high. He hasn't got the strength to be chasing, pinning, or dominating me at the moment. I'm disappointed. He settles at my response, and I carry on to the kitchen, glancing at the clock on the oven as I fetch a glass. 8 o'clock. I've slept for 10 hours straight. That hasn't happened since, well, since I was last with Jesse. I grab a bottle of water from the fridge and fill the glass before returning to find Jesse sitting up on the sofa with his head in his hands, the blanket pooling in his lap. When I reach him, he lifts his gaze to mine, and our eyes lock as I hand him the water. With his good hand, he takes the glass, his fingers resting over mine, and I retract mine quickly, the water splashing out of the glass. I don't know why that happened, and the look on his face makes me feel instantly heartless. He's shaking dreadfully, and I'm wondering if it's withdrawal. I'm sure I read shakiness is a symptom, along with a catalogue of other signs. He follows my eyes to his hand and shakes his head. This is weird. Things have never been like this between us. Neither of us knows what to say. When did you last have a drink? I ask. This is pink elephant in the room territory, but I've got to say something. He sips his water and then slumps back on the sofa, his abdominals looking sharper from his slight weight loss.
I don't know. What day is it?
Saturday.
Saturday?
He asks, obviously shocked.
Fuck.
I'm assuming this means he's lost a lot of time, but he can't have been in this penthouse for 5 days solid just drinking. Surely he would be dead. And then the silence falls again, and I find myself back on the chair opposite him, twiddling my thumbs and searching my brain for the right thing to say. I hate this. I wouldn't usually think twice about diving on him and throwing my arms around him, letting him smother me completely. But he's so delicate at the moment, which is crazy, considering his tall, if a bit leaner, frame. My strong rogue is reduced to a shaking mess. It's killing me. This man is not the man I fell in love with. Is this the real Jesse? He sits and fiddles with his glass thoughtfully, and the familiar sight of the cogs turning is comforting. It's a little piece of him that I recognize, but I can't bear this silence. Jesse, is there anything I can do? He sighs.
There are lots of things you can do, Ava. But I can't ask you to do any of them.
He doesn't look at me. Do you want a shower? I ask softly. He leans forward and winces.
Sure.
I watch him struggle to his feet, and I feel like a cold cow for not helping him. But I don't know if he wants me to, and I'm not sure that I can. The atmosphere between us is so awkward. As he stands, the blankets fall to his feet, and he looks down at his naked body.
Shit,
he curses, reaching down to retrieve one of the blankets. He wraps it around his waist and turns toward me.
I'm sorry,
he says on a shrug.
Sorry?
Like I haven't seen it all before. Lots, in fact. In his words, there is not a place on my body that hasn't had him in it, on it, or over it. My shoulders droop, and I sigh as I start walking with him up the stairs to the master suite. It takes a while, and we're surrounded by an uncomfortable silence the whole way, but we make it eventually. Would a bath be better? I ask, walking ahead into the bathroom. He looks exhausted after his trek up the stairs, so standing in the shower isn't going to be fun. A good muscle soak in the bath will probably help. He shrugs again.
I suppose.
I turn the giant mixer tap on and run my hand under it until the temperature is right, while trying my hardest not to think about tub talk and the fact that Jesse is a self-proclaimed bath man now, but only when I'm in there with him. I turn and come face to face with the vanity unit. That is where we had our first sexual encounter. This bathroom is where we showered together, bathed together, and had many steamy sex sessions together. It's also where I last saw him. Stop! I shake my thoughts away and busy myself finding some bath soak and generally puttering about, while Jesse stands propped up against the wall in silence. The bath takes forever to fill, and I begin to wish I had just shoved him in the shower. "There," I say once it's full, turning to escape the awkwardness.
"You're acting like a stranger," he says softly, just as I reach the door, stopping me in my tracks.
This is so very painful. I don't turn around. "I feel like a stranger," I say quietly, swallowing hard and trying to prevent the shakes that are threatening to invade my body. Silence settles again. I really don't know what to do. I thought the pain couldn't get any worse. I thought I was in the lowest level of hell already.
I was wrong. Seeing him like this is crippling me.
I need to leave and continue with my battle to get over this man. I feel like I've been knocked back a few steps now that I've seen him again, but the truth is, I hadn't really made any progression in my recovery.
"Please look at me, Ava."
My heart sprints up to my throat at his words, which are a plea rather than the usual demand. Even his voice sounds different. It's not the familiar deep, husky, sexy rumble I know. Now it is cracked and broken. He is cracked and broken, which means I am cracked and broken. I slowly pivot to face the man, who is a stranger to me, finding his bottom lip wedged between his teeth as he looks at me through hollow green eyes. "I can't do this." I turn and leave, my heart hammering, but getting slower at the same time. It's going to stop soon.
"Ava."
I hear him coming after me, but I don't look back. He's not at full strength, so this might be the only time I actually can get away from him. What was I thinking coming here? Flashbacks of last Sunday overwhelm my head as I take the stairs fast, my vision blurry, my legs numb. As I hit the bottom of the staircase, I feel the familiar grip of his hand around my wrist, and I panic, flying around to push him away from me. "No!" I scream, frantically trying to release myself from his harsh hold. "Don't touch me!"
"Ava, don't do this,"
he pleads, grabbing my other wrist and holding me in front of him.
"Stop!"
I crumble to the floor, feeling helpless and fragile. I'm already broken, but he can dish the final blow that will finish me off.
"Please don't," I sob. "Please don't make this harder."
He collapses to the floor with me, pulling me onto his lap and smothering me completely. I sob relentlessly into his chest. I can't control it. His face pushes into my hair.
"I'm sorry," he whispers. "I'm so, so sorry. I don't deserve it, but give me a chance."
He squeezes me hard.
"I need another chance."
I don't know what to do. I'm being honest. I feel the need to escape him, but at the same time, I feel the need to stay and let him make things better. But if I stay, will I get dealt that death blow? Or if I leave, will that be the death blow for both of us? All I know is the strong, firm, assertive Jesse, the Jesse who broods when I defy him, manhandles me when I threaten to leave him, and fucks me until I'm delirious. This is the furthest away from that man.
"Don't run away from me again,"
he begs, holding me tight. I notice his shakes have subsided. I pull back, wiping my tear-stained face with the back of my hand, my eyes fixed on his stomach, his scar bigger and more obvious than ever before. I can't look at his eyes. They're not familiar to me anymore. They're not dark with anger or sparkling with pleasure, not narrowed fiercely or hooded with lust for me. They are empty pits of nothing, with no comfort to offer me. Despite that, though, I know if I walk out of that door, I'm finished. My only hope is to stay, find the answers that I need, and pray they don't destroy me. He has the power to destroy me. His cold hand slides under my chin and pulls my face up to his.
I'm going to make this all right. I'm going to make you remember, Ava.
I stare into his eyes and see determination through the haze of green. Determination is good, but does it eradicate the pain and madness that has come before it? Can you make me remember the conventional way? It's not a joke, although he smiles a little.
I'm making it my mission objective. I'll do anything.
His words, a repeat from the launch night of Luso, are spoken with as much resolve now as they were back then. He kept his promise to prove that I wanted him. A small flicker of hope lightens my heavy heart, and I sink my face back down into his chest, clinging onto him, hearing a quiet exhale of breath escape his lips as he pulls me closer and holds on like his life depends on it. It probably does, and mine too. Your bath will get cold, I mumble into his bare chest, when we're still crumpled on the floor in a firm hold sometime later.
I'm comfy, he grumbles,
and I detect a familiar piece of Jesse in his tone. You need to eat as well, I inform him, feeling strange dishing out instructions to him. And that hand needs seeing to. Does it hurt?
Like hell.
I'm not surprised. It looks terrible. Come on. I pry myself out of his vice grip, prompting him to grumble, but he releases me. Standing up, I put my hand out to him, and he looks up at me with a small smile before taking it and lifting himself from the floor. We walk quietly up the stairs and back to the master suite. In you get, I order quietly, pointing at the bath.
Are you making